System check for the Charter Review Commission, Wednesday, October 21st at 6 p.m. Microphone 1. Microphone 2. Microphone 3. Microphone 4.
And then when you're ready,
we'll place the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Give me the volunteer to cover that room. Trying to give you guys some words.
Everybody knows Michelle, so I can't get past that on the agenda. And if you wouldn't mind, we'll take a roll call.
Okay. Steve Altman.
Here.
Paul Burkhardt.
Here.
Bruce Ferguson.
Here.
Sandra Johnson Fields.
Here.
Dave Forshay.
Here.
Fred Harding.
Here.
Peg Harrison. Bill Liblick.
Here.
Brian McPhillips.
Here.
Larry Richardson.
Here.
Norman Sutherland.
Here.
Tom Walters.
Here.
And as everybody knows, that Ray resigned from this board, and at this moment there has not been a replacement name, so we're working one down. I would ask that, particularly for Michelle's benefit, that when you speak, please speak to the chair, and we try to keep one conversation going at a time. I promise you everybody will have a chance to speak, but I know sometimes we get excited and we like to step on people's. So, anyway, if you would, that'd be helpful. With that, I'd ask for approval of the September 16th minutes.
So moved.
There was one misstatement by Joe in there that I don't know whether it made it into the minutes or not, but he said that the Medicaid expenses to the county were $2.2 million. It's actually $22 million. And he repeated that several times. So if it's in there, we should just correct that. He said it was $2.8 million. It's actually in excess of $22 million.
Okay, so noted. So with that addition, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So
we have it. I'm sorry. We have a motion and second order. I'm sorry. And we need a vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone
opposed?
Technically,
I have to abstain since I wasn't at
the
meeting.
So noted. One abstention.
Okay.
Okay, then we'll move to old business. Meeting dates. Meeting dates through 2015. We had some discussion about that last month. Are we set the way we are just going to go with the regular meeting dates?
And third Wednesday for November and December.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
In December, we'll figure out what we're going to do for January and February.
Okay.
So what's the December date?
Third Wednesday.
December 30th.
Okay.
It's a bigger table.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also
cozier.
16th.
The
16th
of December.
Well, you hear better in there. I'm sorry if this song to me drowns out that end of the table a great deal.
Whole different personality in there.
Yeah. There you go.
18th of
okay.
November.
Okay. Next up under old business, the budget request response. And Paul, you saw the email that came in late this afternoon, or did you see it?
No.
Well, we did get an email response. Peggy has been talking to Josh, trying to see how that works, whether there's a separate line, what amount that's going to get in there. And I did copy the email, came through very late this afternoon from Josh, and it says, "Hi, Peg. I've just billed the 2016 tentative budget. Filed. I have included $10,000 in the legislative budget for the Charter Review Commission. It is currently in appropriation line A1010-40-4013, which is the legislative office contract line. It can move to a different appropriation line if necessary. Your new secretary will cost somewhere between $3,000 and $6,600, depending on the frequency of the meetings and the location of the meetings. You'll have an opportunity to discuss your proposal with the legislature prior to their adoption of the budget, if you so choose." So that's where we are at this moment. So we did get a response, and there's a line item. I'm not sure what else comes out of that line, but
What did we request?
35.
35.
And she told them specifically why, and I brought it just in case anybody wanted it reread so that they clearly understood what we were asking for and why we were asking for it. So that's not going to happen.
Does anybody know when that opportunity to speak to them would be?
When they have the hearings.
It's going to be it'll be published somewhere,
yeah.
Right?
Well, you can always go to the budget committee meeting talk there too.
Okay.
You can, any one of their scheduled budget committee meetings. The hearing is the least effective,
right,
to do anything at. You want to. The input comes at the committee level.
Okay. Yes, Paul.
I have another suggestion. Every one of us, because Peg made sure that we got a copy of exactly what she presented and what she asked for to Josh. I would ask that all of us pick up the phone and call our legislator that appointed us to this commission, because I intend to call mine, have a conversation about the amount of money and what we asked for and why we asked for it. Because I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, and I hope it's not what I think it might be, because otherwise I think some of us are going to be very upset if we ever found out that was the case. But that's not even remotely close to covering us later on if we're going to be going out and doing what we need to do for a mandatory referendum. So we want to make that very clear to each one of our legislative representatives that put us here, and they asked us to do this job. Up to this point, we're spending every penny for our own gas, our own telephone calls. I got a ton of them. I got that file filled with paperwork, etc. And we're all doing it out of our own pocket. To expect us to do the rest of this at the end, no way. Wrong.
Okay.
I agree.
Well said. Okay. Next thing up is... last time we talked a little bit about trying to put a list of presenters together and prioritize them who we want to hear. Have you given any thought to that? Anybody, have we got a preference who we want to hear from next?
I can at least fill you in on some things up to this point. We had talked about the county clerk, because uniquely he had been the elected treasurer, then the appointed county manager, and now he's the elected county clerk. So he can really bring a unique perspective. I called Dan, because I chair the next meeting, to see if he could make it, and he can't. He'll be down south because his son's getting married. So he can make the December meeting, but he will not be able to make the next meeting. We have discussed having the sheriff and the district attorney. So if everybody's in agreement, I can call both the sheriff and the district attorney and see if they can present at the November meeting. Now, in addition to that...
Do you want them both here at the same time?
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time, because I don't think they're going
to
be...
Well, maybe
long.
One wants to talk about the other.
I just ran through a list to see who people may want to, you know, see if we can squeeze into the November meeting. Well, you talked about the Public Works Commissioner, Ed McAndrew, because of all that he controls and the amount of money in the budget and the airport and all the rest of it. That's number one. Kathy Patty and Roberta Lockwood, both of them here, same night. One's head of Chamber of Commerce, the other one's head of Tourism, to get their perspective from how they see the form of the government and how the government is working. That might be interesting. So that's a possibility. Commissioner of Planning, that might be a possibility. Elliot Auerbach, which we had mentioned. Bob Green, Dick Reisling. Bruce had suggested this at the last meeting to see how what their perspective is and why they didn't go forward after what they had discussed at the last Charter Commission. Aileen Gunther. If you want Aileen, you got to get her next month or December. Once January comes, forget it. She's never going to have time. So if you decide on that, I can try to get her for the November meeting. Mike Hine, we want him, the county exec out of Ulster. Eddie Diana was fantastic, former county exec out of Orange. He was a terrific speaker in front of the last Charter Commission. Dave Fanslor is another person. So you tell me, who would you like me to try and get other than the sheriff and the district attorney?
All of those.
Yeah, all of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think any of them, certainly. And I have some other names. I mean, going down the road,
I
put down the BOCES superintendent. I put down the college president. And these are agencies that take an awful lot of tax dollars, and we should see how they interact. I put down the head of soil and water. I did say the past Charter Commission members, and I think they would be really helpful for us. We should reach out to the spokesman. I'm not sure what their title is for the town supervisors. They do meet regularly now. Also, the highway superintendents, the county, the town highway superintendents, they have a loose organization now, and they meet regularly. I mentioned a partnership for economic development. Those are just a few others that I jotted down. So there are an awful lot of names over the next year we need to hear from.
Do we have an end date? Or
I'll have no hair left.
Based on what I'm hearing.
You have a 40-year commitment.
It's almost a two-year process at least.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, you want to, I'm sorry. Paul?
Yes, let me just add, I'm sorry, Steve, you were ahead.
No, I just want to mention the present commissioner of jurors has a lot of experience.
Absolutely.
Yes. George Cook. Yeah, George Cook too, yeah. Is another good possibility. Yeah. Let me ask this. If the sheriff can come and if the district attorney can come, that's two that we had said we definitely want. Do you want me to try Haleen to see if she could make it first before I go to anybody else on the list? You tell me. Yes? No?
Well, if the sheriff can come any time and the DA can come any time, then we fill the slots for the people that can't come any time.
So let me try Aileen, yeah. Okay, and see if she can make it, if that's okay with everybody. And then if either the sheriff or the district attorney can't, then I'll backfill trying to get another commissioner.
But what do you do with John Bonasek?
You've got to ask him, too, yeah, I would exactly. think, if he wants to come. Yeah. You know, they may hesitate because of what we're doing. They may want to not step into that. Like the BOCES superintendent,
you know, are you
may
volunteering
not want to come anywhere near this.
Might not,
and ask
but
him.
There's a big...
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you volunteering to fill our dance card? Well, what I mean is, if it's on one hand, then it's done efficiently, rather than many people calling many people.
Well, each one of us chairs a meeting. Like the next one is Peg's. I mean, the next one is mine. The one after that is Peg. So the person that chairs it is actually responsible for setting the agenda, getting the speakers, etc. But through this process, we kind of help each other get that done. For example, okay. Dan, we know, can make it in December, so she's got one person already taken care of. So between the three of us, Steve, we do talk to each other.
Yeah, and
we coordinate.
I think the fact that as you talk to these people, or any of us talk to these people, they say, well, I can't do this, I'll do the next month. We've all agreed we want to hear from these people, so I don't think the chair is going to say, no, I don't want to hear that person.
That's right. That's exactly what we're doing with Danny Briggs.
That's right. Right. So.
And okay. should we limit to how many people? Because some of them give pretty long presentations, nothing personal.
Oh,
yeah.
I plan on being short.
I see a pilot.
You know, I think that like Nancy and Joe, when they came, it's a technical issues because they're so much involved with the day-to-day operations, and Josh. But I think when we get to like Aileen and the chamber and the visitors, it's not going to be as detailed as the others.
Because one meeting we had, one of the first people scheduled never got on.
Right. That was when Josh and Joe Tudor.
Yeah, I don't see, once we get out to that core government, I don't see the long presentations from any of them.
I think the sheriff and the district attorney, they're not going to be nearly as long. They'll be relatively short.
You probably could put them in with Dan Briggs.
Maybe see how it
Well, Dan Briggs could be long because he's been in so many different positions.
He's have to remember a lot. His department also is a quasi arm of the state directly, and he's going to get into how all of this works.
True.
Okay, so we know where we're going with that. The other question I noted here was posting the minutes, and you had mentioned briefly. These minutes will be posted on the website at some point.
The minutes are actually posted now, so once they're approved in your committee, they'll go. Tomorrow I will send this to MIS to have them put it on the website.
Okay.
But what we're trying to do is the audio on this picks up very well. So the change in as far as the secretary that you had versus now is going to be, the minutes are not going to be verbatim minutes. So the actual audio is going to be posted as well. So if somebody actually wanted to listen to details of what you said in this meeting, they can go on there and listen to it. We're hoping to get that on the website. I don't know, it depends how big the files are, but then they'll also have the minutes as well.
And once you get this done, can you email us and tell us exactly what we need to do to get there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But we've been getting the minutes emailed to us.
Sure.
Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna still email the minutes to you. They're not gonna be verbatim, so it's not gonna be Larry Richardson said, it's gonna be more of what the topic was that was discussed and what the final outcome was.
The gist of the conversation.
Yeah, and what I could do too is, as we go along, I can take the audio of each of the meetings and burn them to a CD and for all the members, so you guys have them as well.
Get it online.
Yeah.
But that might be good. I heard Michelle.
Keep safe.
Find them on the county website.
If you go to departments and you actually have a Sullivan County Charter Revision Commission department.
I tell you, you know, those minutes from those early meetings are really long. But I started reading them today, and it is very helpful to have it printed.
Very helpful to have.
You know, I'm copying and pasting what I consider important sections of it, and I'm putting it into a kind of a summary for myself. So, okay. The only other question I had under old business was, when Steve Aguero was here, there were certain things that he was going to follow up on, which I never saw happen. And one of them was the term limit issue, which I came across when I was reading at this point. And the issue was if there were any towns that had uniform term limits now versus staggered limit or term limits and staggered limits, or, you know, we talked about whether we should have four or five, you know, how that happens. You have four people maybe and five people or whatever. And he was going to get back to us, and I didn't see anything come back. So I did send an email to Terry to ask her if she had contact information with him. If anybody else has it, we could share it, and I'll reach out to him directly. But if not, I'm waiting for her to get back to me to see if she's got an email form or a phone number or something.
Can
you? Yeah. So I'll just prod him a little bit and see if he'll follow up on those issues. They're important issues that we discussed.
Absolutely.
So, okay. That's all I have on their old business. Anybody else have anything on their old business? Nancy's been really, really, really patient.
I'm trying to be zen. I just came off of our foreclosure, and we probably just did 12,000 pieces of mail. So it's been a hectic couple of weeks. So the truth is, I only put this together this morning. So. Okay. You guys all have the charter and the This is, we're in section 5C5.00. C5.01. So I'm really not going through all of this, so you're really lucky. But one of the most important points, I'm going to read a lot of this, and I don't usually do that. I usually talk free. But I don't think I can get everything across. I'm a little burnt out from work right now, so I apologize for reading this. I think one of the most important focal points that we need to discuss tonight is that when you look in here, at one point it talks about the collaboration with the county manager, the county treasurer, and the commissioner of management and budget regarding the annual estimate of revenues or certification of the revenues for the budget. It's in the earlier part, and when Josh was here, he went over that the county treasurer certifies the revenues, and then what the process was if we didn't agree. You know, it goes to list. So he went over that with you, and that was something they did. They put into the charter the last time they met, which I think was really important, because what that really does is it gives a separation. Of the revenues, there's a check and balances now. I'm totally independent by virtue of it's an elected office. And with the county exec form of government, the finance officer is, if that's the way you go, is appointed. So what are you going to certify for your boss, revenues? So there's no check and balance there, like we have right now. And Josh and I had a discussion on some of the things. I put down where I was going. He put down what he would like to see, and we had to talk and negotiate. It wasn't, you know, we had to look at and we crunched numbers, and he came up this way, I came up this way. We finally, he didn't know what I was going to do in the end, but I certified, and I believe we met equally. So I want you to really think about that this county has check and balances with the budget. I think years ago we may have had a problem. It's only my opinion and there's no proof, but it could have been a problem years ago when all of a sudden we had this big problem, and the next year we had to lay people off. So now we have more checks and balances. There's more people having say in this budget. So I just think there's no way for revenues to be inflated at this point because you have two separate offices talking about them. Talking about NYSEC, I called them up today. Steve was out of the office. But when he was here, the one thing he had said is every county does it different. Whether they have county exec, board, supervisors, or legislators, there are no two alike. There's no two county exec counties alike for the other ones. And one of the things he did say, because I was sitting here and I'm friends with him, was to make sure, and Elliot was there sitting with me, that in some counties they do have an elected treasurer also. So again, not everything is the same. So of course, you know, I'm here to plead for the position because I think it's important to have that position. So I asked, and I got Dave Lucas, who you could also speak with if you call up for Steve. He's a little hard to get a hold of. And I asked him, I told him what Steve had said when he was here, and this is today. So on the top of his head, he knew of two counties, which was Suffolk and Montgomery, that are county exec form of government with elected treasurers. So I know I spoke to somebody and they didn't believe me, so I wanted to double check. He also said the city of Saratoga Springs has an elected mayor, comptroller, and treasurer. That's not a county, but it was an example of a form of government that's bigger than Sullivan County that had that. I'm gonna give you some things. Most everything, there's a lot of things that are listed here, and I made copies of that if you need it, of powers and duties. But I'm going to emphasize some of the other things that we do. Some of them are on here, but there's things that aren't. This I have a copy of, if anybody wants.
Yes, can we get all the copies of your? Mm-hmm. I would appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
The county treasurer. And again, I'm sorry, I'm reading this.
You have copies of that with you now?
I do.
Can you send them around?
Oh, yeah.
If I do, then will you listen to me when
yes,
I do it?
Yes, of course.
No, but I like to make notes in the margins.
Right.
Okay. They have front and back, so, you know, I can do that in mine.
A good cost cut.
All right. The county treasurer is a tax lien enforcement officer as mandated by New York State Real Property Tax Law Article 11. We collect and enforce delinquent town and county taxes as well as school taxes. For uncollected taxes, we commence, prosecute, and consummate foreclosure proceedings, then taking title to unredeemed properties. We manage the properties which we have taken title to until they are sold at public auction, which we also administrate. We manage a repurchase program and an installment payment program. We also inspect every property physically before we take title in order to virtually eliminate the risk of acquiring environmental liability. To emphasize on that a little bit more quickly, we had a dam one time, and we don't want a dam, and we had it pulled from the foreclosure. We contacted the judge and asked to pull it from the foreclosure. 2 weeks later, the DEC contacted us and was trying to penalize us because we had a dam that needed structural work. So our guy that does this saved the county millions of dollars. What we also do is any gas station or building that's falling down, we will put in the order to take title. We don't actually put the deed into the county name until we go to public auction and we sell that property. And then we file two deeds at the same time. We are in the chain of title, but we're in the chain of title for 5 minutes. It's just things that we do to take extra precaution. The county treasurer is the chief fiscal officer of the county as mandated by the New York State County Law and General Municipal Law. We handle all county monies and maintain and balance over 40 bank accounts. We borrow money in the name of the county and yearly deal with bond rating agencies. We make all payments of interest and principal and outstanding bonds and notes. We do weekly wires for Medicaid, and just for record, that's $375,660 every week I wire. So that's where you get the $22 million.
Can you say that again? How much a week?
$375,000.
$375 per week. Thank you.
And we are responsible for reporting to the county legislature and county manager on a regular basis. I wrote we collect sales tax, which is kind of silly because, you know, we just monitor it. They put it into our account. We don't actually go out and collect it. So I'm sorry I wrote it that way. Mortgage tax, room tax, and real property tax, stumpage tax, and others. We alone manage the cash balance, pay debts, and sell anticipation notes and or bond anticipation notes. Those cans and bands are at the discretion of the treasurer. We don't do anything, of course, without legislative approval, but the amount and all that is really the treasurer's decision. We're the ones that know when we need cash flow and things like that.
How do you share that information with the county manager? How is that done on a weekly basis? You know, when the money's coming in or not? I mean, is that done on a weekly basis? How do you communicate?
This part is a tan and ban, and that we only do borrowing once a year. We're actually already talking about borrowing for next year because they used to, on occasion, sometimes it was unplanned, they would borrow more than once a year, and it costs a lot of money to borrow. And we have it, unless it's an emergency, we only borrow once a year. Because one of the books I have here, you know, I wanted to show you some items of what gets done. This right here is an official statement. We in our office don't print this and do that. We give them all the information. It takes a long time to do this. And if we do two borrowings, this gets done all over again, even if it's 2 weeks later. It gets updated.
Who does that in an account?
The treasurer's office gives them all the information. The actual official statement is done by we have bond counsel and bond advisors, and the bond advisors put it together, but it's from the information that we give them. And the other thing I have here, and I'll go over in just a minute, this is our CAFR.
What is it?
Our CAFR, this is a comprehensive report that, again, we give them all this information to be able to do this. And then and you'll see in a minute, and this is a single audit.
Is this information published on the website?
It is.
So the next paragraph talks about the filing the annual report with the New York State Comptroller and the annual audited financial report with the county legislator. We also assist in the single audit, which is this one. The CAFR, that's what we call this, we put in, and you can read this, the GFOA, which is Government Finance Officers Association, every year. In the 15 years that I have been in the treasurer's office, and I'm not taking credit that I did it, but I'm telling you that while I was there for 15 years, we have won excellence in accounting every year, including last year.
From who?
GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association. It's a really prestigious award, and not every county gets that.
So far you're doing good, except for this type of
one
and one.
Anyways. All right.
Sorry.
So I started briefing some of the items that we do. We collect and enforce the county's room tax. And if there's anything I'm telling you that you're not aware of and that you have a question on, just stop me. Because a lot of people don't realize all the things we really do. We deposit and administrate court and trust fund accounts. We collect local fees, 9/11, and which is a self-franchise fee. We collect and remit bail money in felony cases, help manage off-book accounts, issue certificates of residency for community college students, issue lien certificates for subdivision filings, enforce the forest tax exemption, which is 480A, and calculate and collect rollback penalties, as well as calculate and disperse stumpage taxes. Manage personal property turned over by coroners pursuant to New York State law. Approve vouchers for New York State and federal reimbursements. Administer decedent's estates when appointed as public administrator by surrogate court. Participate in New York State Association of Treasurers, NYSAC GFOA, and there's also a Treasurers Association. Bill and collect taxes from utilities and other corporations, as well as pilots for public authorities. Prepare agendas for Real Property Advisory Board to prepare all deeds and New York State forms required to file the deeds from the private sales and public auction. Assist department, fiscal officers in properly recording and claiming revenues and expenses. Maintain accurate accountability on all county debt, record state and federal receivables and track payments. Assist all departments on the New World software implementation of additional modules. Maintain financial accuracy for entire county general's ledger. Track county revenues, including sales tax, and certify them for the budget process. Now, I know that doesn't sound like that much, but here, which I'm not going to go over every one of them, this is more of a daily type thing by individuals in the office. We had to do this years ago. The county was looking for something, so this is the staff that we have, and it goes into a little more detail of items that we do.
How large is the staff?
Including myself, there's 13.
What would happen if someone without experience was elected to this position?
All right, so here's
You've had much experience, we all know that.
I'm going to tell you the honest truth. A lot of elected officials, that's what they are, elected officials. And they understand workings of a department. I can tell you that the day I started, our real property supervisor retired. I learned that job really fast. And I will tell you that Paul Burkhart was there and he helped me. He spent a lot of time with me, and Ira did as county attorney. And I can probably tell you that today, talking about NYSAC and how I know them, their legal department, that guy was down here that night, they call me on all real property issues, and they consider me their expert. And Paul knows that, and I mean, that's like the biggest honor when they call me to ask me to help out other counties. But to answer that question, I'm a very hands-on type person, and there's nothing beneath me, and there's nothing that I won't do. And as we lost people and budget crunches and that, I took on new work. So what would happen in my position? I don't need to be conceited, but this county would be in a lot of trouble.
So we have to be careful who we vote for, treasurer.
But there's a lot of things on that list that nobody knows how to do except for me. I mean, some of my office had some idea, but the stumpage and all the 480A, I'm the only one that knows how to do it.
Isn't there going to be an income stream through your office from the casino?
We're hoping that when that happens, there will be a lot of money coming through the county.
But it would come through you.
Yes, it will.
Well, the sales tax goes to the state and then they reimburse you.
But
there's fees that get charged and commitments to fund the county for extra police or whatever.
I will tell you that Angela will go over part of it. I mean, we collect all the money that people get, even if there's an office that gets real property. He's back there. They get money for tax maps. They collect it in their office, but then they bring it to us. Planning, personnel, when people take tests, they pay $10 to take a test. They pay them, but all that money comes down to us, and we do the final deposit. I go banking every day to the banks. Audit, they they audit the vouchers and they input the information. We cut the checks, but that's actually their department. There are things that we do that don't go through audit, you know, paying the bonds and interest and Medicaid and, you know, there's some things that don't go through them, but 95% of anything that gets paid out, or even higher percentage, goes through audit.
About Medicaid, does the bills change on a weekly basis?
They used to change, but what they did a couple years ago, the state, it used to be you never knew what you were going to get,
right.
But they capped it.
Okay.
So
that's right.
Right. So it's the same for the whole year, and it's a different fiscal year. There'll be one or two weeks where you'll be paying more.
Catch up, right, but it's a cap now.
Is it true that there's going to be a major reduction in Medicaid expenses to the county? Have you heard that?
I've heard it. I'm
just looking at a report. This is from Orange County that was in the Times Herald Record a couple weeks ago. It said a net decrease of $7.5 million in the 2016 budget. This is for Orange County. The cost sank nearly $10 million last year after peaking at $183 million a year earlier. So that sounds like a 10% drop. I guess it's not that. It's a lot of money, but when you put it, if they have a $183 million budget, it's not that big a drop. But it's a 10% drop nonetheless. Isn't it? Anything like that happened a year ago?
I haven't gotten any notice from the state on it yet.
Yeah.
So, Nancy, if I could ask you, let's say in a perfect world, how would you improve how your office interacts with the rest of the county government? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think if you ask any county government that comes in here, office, how our office is, not just me, the office in whole, but we have an open door policy. One of those things I just said, it was New World implications. That's something that our IT department should be doing. But because one of my girls in accounting, besides that we hold the general ledger and all that, she has in her bachelor, she has a minor in a computer. And she helps implement. Right now they're implementing for risk management. And my office has been doing a lot of manual work, implementing it and trying to balance it so that office can get up and running. We're taking the heat for it, you know, doing all the work. And that's not the only one. They do it. We're just an open door. We help anybody at any time. And it's the way we are. We'd rather be really busy and,
you know, you learned that your duties and responsibilities very well over all those years you were in there. Are you training a deputy now? I mean, if something happened to you, God forbid, tomorrow.
I know.
You made a statement that nobody really knows the whole department. Isn't that important?
14 years of experience.
It is, but I have someone that's been there a month, or a couple months. It takes time.
We can get our budget if we kidnap her.
You think so?
Just hold it for the buck for our 35.
This is Steve Altman speaking.
I believe, and even Michelle, I think, can say that I'm a worker and our office is open door and we help any office. And I do stay in contact with Josh, Scott, the legislators. I ask to be on all committees that I can get on. I'm at all committee meetings, except for the afternoon ones, because I do the county banking, so I do blow them off. I have to tell you the truth most of the time. But I'm there. I think that this position needs to be at all those committee meetings and understand the fiscal implications that might be coming from it.
So does that mean that maybe your position shouldn't be an elected position, and it should be an office of a treasurer or a controller's office, be because of these reasons that the public, when it comes to a vote, can possibly vote on popularity and not vote on someone who has the expertise as you have.
And if I could piggyback off that, what it works fine now because you have a good working relationship and you're open to dealing with the county manager. Say you don't get voted in based on a popularity contest, what shape would the government be in with someone that wasn't willing to work with the county manager?
You know what? Life is a gamble. We've been waiting for how many years for a casino? We're still waiting.
Six.
They haven't started digging for the foundation yet.
Dave, did you have a question as well?
No, I was just wondering that. My gosh, say for instance tonight you go out, you have an automobile accident, you're in a coma. What's next?
Thank God I have a staff. Hey, for you guys, that's all I can tell you. And I do have a deputy that can sign. When Ira died last year, it'll be a year ago Monday that he died. That day, I went in on that Monday. He died Sunday, and I went in Monday.
It was
business as usual. We went to the bank. We needed to get my signature on all the checks, and we took care of it. And the only thing we had to do is we had to stop our foreclosure and start over because I had it 90% done, and I had his name on it. So I had to start over, and that's the worst, you know, besides emotionally. We carried on, and we worked really hard, and everything went smoothly. So it would
move,
if I died, something
would
run
smooth. Let me try to go on to work. Bruce?
I think what a lot of us are asking about is, because what we're looking at is the systemic structure here, and apart from personalities and ability, is there anything in the charter that you're aware of that you think should be changed because it will protect us if we get less qualified or less capable or less hardworking people in these positions?
I do think that you need to, if you kept it this way, you need to boost. It's really hard to find where it's mandatory to have a deputy in the treasurer's office. I know it's in there, but it's not real clear. And I do think that should be clearer because it is a really important office. I told you, when Ira passed, we ran smoothly. That next day, that Monday, everything was fine. This county continued. And that's the way it needs to be. And you need to make that clear in there.
Okay. Fred, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to clarify something. Is there, in fact, then, a person who has the title deputy? Or
yes.
Is it an ad hoc position?
No, I hired a deputy.
So the important part, then, I think, is that the deputy must become totally qualified very quickly, because I assume that's an employee of the county. And so if the election should go the wrong way, you would still have an employee who is extremely qualified.
No,
that's
no,
not true.
No.
The deputy is at will of the elected person.
Sure. Okay, so it's written that way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Can't wait. Just one second.
It's not a question. I want to just technically add to that, just to help clarify it. We had a question right in the beginning as to exactly where the deputy for the treasurer sat, okay? If you look at the code and you look at the charter, certain deputies are specifically stipulated. The one for the treasurer was not stipulated in the charter. Finally found it on the next to the last page, buried in the back in the code. It was almost as if it was missed, somebody realized it and then included it and fixed it with some other things. So the deputy's position is not in the charter, it's in the code. But there is a specific code reference for the treasurer to appoint a deputy.
But to piggyback just really quick, the rest of the staff are civil service employees in that whole department, and you know, everybody has their jobs, and my office especially, we work together, we cross train I have accounting people working in taxes and vice versa, so, you know, there's a lot of things that I do, they could figure out, you know, if something happened, they could do it. It would be a learning curve, and as far as my deputy, she's very, very willing. She wanted to be here tonight. She's an eager person, and she's learning, but she's only been here a couple of months.
Nancy?
I guess it's no longer than that.
So what's that? Ken's been waiting.
Well, there's a few things here that's going on. First of all, we had a lot of budget cuts many years ago, and people were cut back, and every office was affected. So we lost depth in all these organizations or offices. From what I gather, conversations I've had with Nancy is, like she said, she came in the door, started someplace, wound up with something, and she grew with the organization and learned different segments of it. So if somebody got elected to office, she was the person that had the information and brought them up to speed. And most people who get elected to office, they have a staff for a reason, and they oversee it. How do we set it up that we maintain an office that's fully staffed? So, you know, the way I see it, there's a lot like cross-training. They're almost like protecting themselves and hope they don't have a crisis where they're going to really be not enough people to go around. So, do we have I like the elected issue because it's a check against the other side versus having a pocket person. So that's a decision we have to make, is do we want to have a check and balance system? And it comes down to staff. If you got good people and a person comes in there, and if you're elected, most people don't want to screw up their job, so they're going to work with the people that are there and move on.
Have you made any changes since you become the treasurer?
There are changes, like, absolutely.
What are you doing differently?
There's nothing that's so out there, because almost everything that we do is by real, in the taxes, by real property tax law. There's a lot of in-house working, the cross-training, we're doing that more. We always had it, but we're emphasizing it even more. There's a lot of little things. There's nothing that I can say, because again, I am one that I follow the law to the T. Sometimes lawyers have this little gray thing with this discretionary. Ira and I used to fight about it all the time, and we don't have that worry anymore, so that's one thing that probably our biggest change is that little gray area is gone. That sometimes there'd be a question on how something might be answered, and everybody knows the way I think in the office.
Oh, yeah.
Before I ask my question, I want to introduce Ed Hominick, who is sitting behind Angela. For those of you that you don't know, he's the director of Real Property Tax Services, a position I used to have, but works very much with the treasurer's office and lien enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to introduce him. Nancy, I'm going to ask you the same question that basically I'm asking for the Charter Commission to all of our speakers, and that's this. You've been at it for a long time, as Ira's deputy, and then doing what you're doing now as the treasurer. So you've been working with and looking at the legislature and the county manager form of government. Do you feel that that form of government, as it is today, is the appropriate form of government for Sullivan County, or do you think we should be looking at something different? And I have a follow-up to that question directly related to it, but I'd like you to answer that first.
I believe that the form of government that the county has right now should stay right now. I think we have a lot of things coming on that are going to impact us in so many ways, and to try to bring in a county exec, build a government, and understand everything that's going on at this point is absolutely wrong. 5 years from now, I may change my mind, I think it should be revisited, but I am strongly, adamantly opposed to something happening right now with everything else that's going on in Sullivan County.
Having said that, hold off on the county executive possibly saying to the legislature 5 years or some other point, if we agree, we want you to look at this, bring it back, and make a determination then because of all the other things. That's something we've discussed before, Nancy, with regards to, even if we decided to do it, when is the time to do it? That's critical because of everything that's going on with the county. So, that brings us back a step to this. If you're saying at this point in time, you're advocating for keeping the county legislature and the county manager, what do you think of the balance between the two? Because one of the things we're going to address is the balance of power between the two where it should be. Should the legislature be more powerful and the manager weaker? Should the legislature be weaker and the county manager more powerful? Whichever way you think, why do you think that?
I think that the county manager should be have more power. That's the person that works every day, that's in that office, that works with the departments, that knows what's going on. The county legislators, we have good ones, and then we have ones that show up maybe 3 days a month. And how much do they really know? The county manager is the person that knows what's going on, and if you give that person the right power, I think the county would run much smoother.
Let me just ask one more thing, if I may, so we're clear on where she's coming from. We have the significance, we have the ability to make a very substantial difference between the two. We can rewrite the charter and the code to significantly weaken the legislature and greatly strengthen the county manager. And we won't get ever to where an elected exec would be. It's impossible. But we can get a little taste of it by making the county manager much more powerful than he is at this point. Are you saying we should look at that?
Absolutely. I think that's a very important thing to do. And I'm not saying that someday the county exec might not be a good form of government here. I actually, in theory, like it. I'm just not ready for it to be in Sullivan County at this time, again, with so much going on. And I do believe that the county manager should have more power over the legislators so that he or she can do their job better.
Thank you for your candor.
Okay. Any other follow-up questions?
What, besides the casino, I'd just like to know, what is going on that's so earth-shattering in Sullivan County that a charter review commission would make a recommendation, let's say, and then it would take a year to get it discussed, so I figure it's 2 years down the road, then it would be a referendum, and after the referendum, so we're talking about at least 5-6 years until there would be a county executive, people vote for it. So what is happening right now in Sullivan County in 2000, and what year are we, 15? That's so earth-shattering. That's happening, that we...
Well, again, I realize it's not going to be this year, next year.
But what's happening? I'd like to know what's happening.
I believe that we're going to have an input of people for jobs, and we're going to lose people in this government because, honestly, we pay terrible wages here. And hopefully, these new resorts that are proposed to come will have decent wages. I hate to see us lose our important people in this county, but we're going to lose employees, and it's a really serious thing.
Mohegan Sun, just one thing there. The Mohegan Sun Foxwoods, when they opened their casinos, they drew their pool outside of their county, and they traveled from New Haven, they traveled from other areas, and that's how it is today. I know people that work there, marketing and in other positions, we're talking about this county and what's going to happen. What are we doing exactly to get people these type of jobs that we're talking about? We're going to lose a pool from the county. Because when you look at the county employees, they're getting the health insurance, they're getting the pensions, and a lot of the private sector does not offer the health insurance and the pensions that they're getting from them. There's also the opportunity when you're working for a county and then comes a double dipping situation.
Unfortunately, so, a lot of young people don't understand how important those benefits are. They look at that pay per hour and they don't understand that having health insurance is 100% better than $5 more an hour. They don't get it. Unfortunately, it's the world we live in.
Sure. That might be a good question for a human resources person or someone other than maybe Nancy.
No, but everyone is saying,
no, I know exactly what you're saying.
What's happening? I'd like to know.
I'm not sure that she's the person to answer that.
Well, she made the statement.
Bruce, again, a quick question on foreclosures, and this is an idea that Elton Harris put forward at the meeting that I was at. I guess my question to tie it into what we're actually about is whether the charter gives you the authority to do this. He said instead of auctioning off dilapidated properties that will never really be habitable in the way that we'd like to see people living, it would make more sense for the county to take those properties, demolish the building, and sell a clean, buildable lot. It would improve the look of the county greatly. And is that something that you have the authority to do?
Ken, what did I bring up in May of this year or April? I asked the legislators to make a commitment to give me X amount of dollars of the proceeds from the auction to do exactly that.
And so you have the authority to do it if the legislature cooperates.
I talked to Josh last month about making it formal, because this is the legislative group that okayed that, to get it something formally on a resolution before the end of the year. The problem is, he's having with me is, where do you come up with the figure? I said a percentage of proceeds from the auction. So we're working on that, and I'm really adamant that I want to see something formal done by the end of the year.
Hundreds of thousands of new people coming here. It would be nice to look a little better.
I absolutely agree.
Than we do today. It would also be safer to get some of this stuff.
Just one second. Steve, did you have a question?
Yes. You mentioned the low salaries in county government. Are you talking about the legislators? Are you talking about the department heads? Are you talking about...
I'm talking about the tax clerks and... I'm not talking about either one of them. I'm talking about civil service, of course, staff.
See, I run a business... 70 or 80 employees. I have profit sharing for them, 6% match on a 401k. They all have health insurance from me, but I don't have retirement. And I lose employees to the county all the time.
I'm not surprised, because some people do realize that important word, retirement, health benefits.
Yeah, and you're right. As they get older, things get more important to them.
Brian, you had a question?
Yeah, I actually have three things. One thing I want to say is the demolition, and I've talked to Elton about this, and I've talked to Nancy before about the one thing I worry about is when you have a foreclosure, for say, like in the Village of Liberty. The Village of Liberty, they're not made whole by the county. They're one of the, as a village, so therefore it's that much harder to get that property back in the black. So what happens is you get a building that becomes to the point of being condemned, but then if the county was given the ability to go and knock that building down, you greatly change the landscape of what your village is. And the cost to renovate a building is compared to a new cost, that you're never going to build that building again. So what you end up having is like dental work to villages. And that could be a potential. That's just my feeling.
No, but I just want to tell you something that you don't know, is that...
Well, potentially.
At the advisory board meeting, unless you know, but there was your code enforcement, the village code enforcement officer and a legislator and two trustees that came, and we had a discussion on county-owned village parcels and village-owned parcels. And... the agreement is that I have a buyer for Frankel, and they pass a resolution on whether or not that person ever pays me, if he hasn't paid yet, that we would do the same thing for the four properties that the village owned that are in terrible shape, as I asked the village to do. So we have working agreements to work together.
Right. No, I am aware of that. But I just a concern of giving the county carte blanche to knock down buildings they want. That's just... my concern. So the second part, maybe it's just me not understanding how it would work, by giving the county manager more power, at what point are you stopping short of him becoming a county executive that's just labeled a county manager And then my other thing was, if I can remember it, because I'm waiting. If we were to go to a county executive form of government, is there any way to take a position of yours and make it more of a department head where you were secure in your job, whereas regardless of who the county manager was or the county executive was, that treasurer department or controller would be protected?
In my mind, that the people of Sullivan County are who I work for, even as a deputy, what you described, my boss is somebody that's going to be making decisions that I have to watch my ass every time I do or say anything. And I'm not an independent person anymore. I'm a worker, and do your work and keep your mouth shut or you'll lose your job.
But if you were civil service, I think is what you're
saying. Exactly. If you were civil service, you would be protected.
If we had a county executive, you'd want to be civil service.
Well, then you now you got to worry about tests and everything.
But if you have somebody in that position with your expertise, the test should be a no-brainer.
The key is she will no longer, there'll be a time when she won't be in that position. How do you feel it?
Well, how do you feel it either way?
Right.
Well, at least with somebody elect, you got a choice to say every 4 years, go or stay. If the other party.
But then you run into the risk of a popularity contest where you're dealing with the finances of the county that.
Okay. We really want to move on to Angela.
Yes.
This is a discussion comes up every meeting, every meeting. You know, very valuable information we got from Nancy, and I appreciate her coming here this evening. That issue is going to come up over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, elected versus appointed, and we're going to really have to wrestle with that toward the end. But thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for being frank.
Send a memo to the county manager that we should get $35,000. Send a message that we should get $35,000 in the budget.
I can mention that, but if you know, he's...
Yeah, but you should say after meeting with us that, you know, we really need the $35,000.
You want to give it out,
right?
You think you charmed her, right?
No. I don't dance all the time.
Yeah, this is the only one I have an extra. The other one's
I can make a
here.
Copy of mine.
I have the. You can have that. I can
print them. Oh, yeah. No, we just need that for Peggy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We sent it to her an email. She can put it up on the website with the minutes.
Thank you for
thank
your time.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Nancy, thank you. And thank you for your patience for waiting to speak to us.
I know that's where I'm going.
I think we want to also thank her. She shows up a lot of our meetings.
She does.
You know, have a good evening.
I do. I go to every meeting. I'm very involved. I'm not just
Okay.
I'm just looking. I made two copies. I wasn't sure how many I need. I think I'm going to need one more. I wasn't sure if I was going to need to hand it out. And now it looks like you want whatever
we
we're discussing.
Handouts.
So.
It makes me feel important when I go home if I got papers.
Should I go make copies?
So while she's doing that, if anybody doesn't know, this is Angela Chevalier.
Chevalier.
Close, right? And she is the Department of Audit. And we thank her very much for being here. And
Maurice was your great-great-great-grandfather?
I like when you say Chevalier, but my husband's family really Americanized the heck out of it. So I pronounce it the way they do. But
you're
like
still related.
So I've been asked that, and I've also been asked there's, I guess, a plastic surgeon that's very well known in Middletown, if I'm related.
He's a very good plastic surgeon.
I hear that. And I said, do I look like I've been related?
Look what he did for Bill.
Nobody's going to see him anymore.
So if you'd like, I really wasn't sure what to expect. What I did was kind of put together getting a couple more printed. And they're coming with three more. So I thought I would first discuss a little bit about my office, and then we can go a little bit more into the charter, if that's okay.
You may want to wait till Michelle gets back
so
she can get her minutes.
That's fine. I wasn't sure if it was being recorded and she'd be listening.
She's taking
it. It is. So if you want to speak highly of the county manager, this is the time to do it. And I'll just say, how long have you been with the county?
I've been with the county 20 years. I came here in July of 1995.
Started when you were 14?
No, I wish. And I started as a staff auditor. I became the deputy county auditor. And in 2009, I became the county auditor. So I've been in that office the entire time, working under different titles. I, too, have been here a long time and grown with the office. When I started, the county auditor's name was Joel Kaplan. And I'll never forget the first thing he told me, because I have to authorize all these payments, was don't sign anything that you're not comfortable with. So I learned everything before I signed it. So any voucher that passed through my office, I would understand why we were paying it and what authority we had to pay. So I learned, and he was a great man to learn from. So now that Michelle's back, I'll go ahead and start. The mission of the Office of Audit and Control is to audit and process all lawful claims and charges against the county or against the funds that the county is responsible for. It is also to promote accountability through county government. We serve the public interest by providing the legislature, county manager, and other county management with reliable information, unbiased analysis, and objective recommendations. We have provided and will continue to provide various types of audit functions and services to all our county departments, as well as to the taxpayers of the county, by keeping a watchful eye on expenditures that flow through our office. Some of the duties are processing of claims. We aggressively audit the claims that have come through my office. We process approximately 45 to 50,000 invoices a year. While auditing the claims, we identify and stop overpayments or duplicate payments, which are submitted on vouchers erroneously from other departments. On average, for the last 3 years, it's been about $210,000 per year that has not gone through the door erroneously. We maintain the vendor information, which is an IRS requirement, by having their proper identification numbers and pertinent information for those vendors on form W-9, which is a federal form, and before we require that form to be on hand before we create a vendor in our system. We issue the 1099s for the entire county. It's about 6,700 1099s a year, depending on each year. It meets the IRS requirements. It fluctuates based on the type of vendor and the number of payments each year. To correctly do that, we have to confirm the vendor information in our financial software, which is called New World, which Nancy had mentioned. We also then have to manually adjust the vendor information for manual check payments made by Family Services, as well as all the payments made through Adult Care Center, and then confirm an import of vendor data, which is paid through the state system, which is called BICS, which is the family system for paying benefits. I feel it is important to keep a separate duties from certain other offices. It is imperative to have proper segregations of duties to protect the funds that the county is responsible for. The structure that currently is in place is nicely segregates revenues, which the treasurer's office oversees, procurement, which purchasing oversees, and the disbursements of funds, which audit and control oversees. My office is also the contract repository, so as such, we collect all original contracts and we keep them on file in our office. We maintain a contract database and we enter pertinent information into it, and we also attach a scan of that contract into the database. We've expanded that and allowed departments to now be able to review that, which limits the paper in their office and such. It has also been added to public access. More on a limited basis, there's certain information that can't be given out, like vendors' tax ID numbers and things like that, but that public access for contracts over $50,000 is going up on the website as well. We provide advisory services to departments, which include but not limited to their budget versus actual contract balances, interpretation of payments within terms within the contracts, encumbrances, which is money that's set aside for future payments. Per directive of the legislature, my office developed and has to maintain a review process now of the drawing down of grant funds. As such, we're the gatekeeper of the drawdowns to ensure grant funds are drawn down following specific grant guidelines. We conduct on a limited basis through the direction of the county manager, legislature, or any other department, such as the district attorney or county attorney, audits and reviews. we provide limited cash counts on select departments. That is limited because of personnel, so we just don't have the manpower to go out and do it. But every once in a while, if it's a department that handles cash, we stop in and try to do a surprise cash count so that you know we're watching them. The calculation of the tax levy is completed within our office. That involves a calculation of the county and tax bill prior to the bill being printed. It involves using the county budget as well as town budgets, all their special districts, various portion districts on that calculation, and other numbers such as the water sewer re-levies, chargebacks, prorates, and omitted school re-levies. I also assist in the real property tax auction by overseeing those transactions and tying out those contracts and the cash that's coming in. I maintain the asset management system and fixed asset policy. Right now, we do have an outside person, employee, tagging the assets, but they tag that asset based on the directions and information from our office. Inside that asset management system, we have all the information plus pictures attached to keep track of those assets. Besides handling the asset information in that system, I also have to report to an outside agency, the appraisal company, every year to provide that information to our outside auditors. I also maintain the lease schedule and other pertinent information to deal with directly with our external auditors. And when needed, I represent the county from an auditing standpoint. Nancy mentioned the CAFRA and such, and we do work hand-in-hand with some of those notes and the information that has to go in it. She's in charge of the revenues. My side starts with the expenses. So when you're reporting and making sure everything's coded correctly during the payment process, it's going into the right expense lines and such, then it's going into the right information and buckets into that financial statement. So we kind of work hand in hand, but one's the revenue side, one's the expense side. So, I did make a quick copy of a page that I kind of just, it's like kind of audit steps. I wasn't sure what to expect. I did note what Kenneth said to give some thought about what my job is and how the charter may or may not be affected by it. And so this is really not discussing that, but I'm sure we could open into that dialogue. But I wanted to give you a background on what we do in, you know, kind of in a nutshell. So, you know, with that, I'll open up to whatever you'd like to discuss, or I could elaborate on whatever you'd like.
Your position is civil service, correct?
Yes, my position is civil service. I had to take a test. It is independent, and this is, it's interesting because in speaking about the treasurer's position, I may or may not be able to be written in the same way,
right.
But I had to take a civil service test. I had to be top three on the list, and then I was appointed. So now I'm protected, so someone can't say you're fired because you won't pay this or do this. The last charter commission, I was the deputy auditor at the time, but they did ask for a statement from me, and my suggestion then was I was under the county manager, and I felt that was too controlling, and I felt it was more important to be under the board where it gave me that stronger independence. And they took that into consideration, and they did change that. I think that change went through in, I want to say, 07, because I was on maternity leave when I came to give the statement, and I had Anthony in 06. So I believe that was 07, around that time. So it is civil service.
So you think it should stay? Everything should?
I do. I don't feel money going out the door should have anything political attached to it. And I feel I'm a very black and white person, and these are the rules and the laws that I have to follow, and it shouldn't really matter if people like me or not want to vote for me. I've pretty much been very strict about that for the 20 years I've been here.
I just have a question. So the civil service position, was that created by civil service based on the request of the charter review, or was there
no.
always a title, but it just was never filed?
I'll tell you how I think it is, and you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong because you were here before me, but I believe the form of government was a county administrator at one time, and that office used to actually handle the payments, and there was a budget office and an expenditure officer out of that. I think problems occurred and there were some issues, and they decided to go with the county manager and create the county legislature as a board of election, board of supervisors, and they also created the county auditor position. So I think that was established in January of 95. I actually started working in July of 95 under a different county auditor. I've worked under two different county auditors, and then I became the county auditor.
So that title through civil service was always there, but this form never utilized it until the 07 change, or was it created?
No, it wasn't. It was in the only change in 07 was that I didn't answer now to the county manager. My independence was tightened by having to answer to the board now. So
and that was done through the charter review.
Yes. Okay. But I believe in 95, the county auditor position was created. It mirrored civil service laws and rules that were already established, I believe.
So do we know, is there that type of civil service, not saying that you'd go that way, but for the treasurer, is there a title within civil service that...
No, I don't think they utilize that. No, it's an elected position.
Right now?
Yeah, it's been elected. It's always been elected, correct?
The treasurer.
Treasurer.
Yes.
And this is an evolution.
You're controlling.
Where Angela is now.
But you have both.
We could change that. If you go to a county executive form of government, even though Nancy mentioned that there are two counties that have elected treasurers, the reality is that's not going to happen.
Right.
You go to an exec, the treasurer is gone.
Right. That's where you save the money.
And so you clearly understand, Angela, in the form that she's now, if we went to a county exec, more than likely the form of the government with her would also change. There is a gray area in an independent entity which has the ability to do what she does and not be controlled by somebody else. And having someone in the position that goes beyond that and creates a difficulty in a county executive form of government. And you'll learn this when we get Mike Heim here. In Ulster, her position is an elected controller. That's Elliot Auerbach.
Right.
She doesn't exist. I don't mean her personally.
Okay.
But the entity doesn't exist. It's an elected position there with all of the problems with that. So there's all kinds of things that can happen.
So
you're learning how this works now. That's not necessarily what's the way it's going to be.
So what's civil service law going to do to, because she's protected now.
She'd be there.
On civil service, so if we change the form of government, how does our, let's say, are they go with the change? What happens to her because she's protected by civil service?
Only if we continue to perpetuate it in the form that it is now.
You'd have to keep me in the charter.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically,
right.
I
raise right. A new set of circumstances.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's not just
but it is the reality of restructuring of government.
That's correct.
And we did, as Paul's alluded to, we did hear, those of us who've been there from the beginning, we heard Dr. Benjamin talk about the fact that there are a number of counties that do have an elected county executive and an elected controller to watch over the county executive.
As long as it's funded.
The funding is, and he makes a point about that,
funded.
That if you don't provide for some sort of fixed funding, then obviously that position can become powerless if you don't fund it.
The charter, it calls that I could have a deputy county auditor if funded.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you who that happens to be, but just let me add one more sometimes I just do technical things, it's not a question. If you look at the charter and you look at the code, treasurer's office is relatively clear of the charter, but in the code there's practically nothing there for the treasurer. Now, if you do the same thing for Angela, it's clear in the charter, and it's also clear in the code because the charter is mirrored in the code, not the same for the treasurer. And specifically, you do have the authority to appoint someone, assuming the legislature funds it. Have they?
I do not have a deputy county auditor.
Okay, see, that's a very significant...
I will tell you, though, that... one more thing about myself is I also am a licensed CPA, and I'm the only CPA in the county.
Oh, I know. That's
interesting. And I've been licensed since 96. and my prior experience is with outside county, or outside auditing with other local firms and such. The structure in my office is the county auditor, and I used to have one accounts payable coordinator. We just restructured, and what we're actually doing is now I have two accounts payable coordinators. We set up a satellite office in Liberty. So within DFS themselves, I now have a separate accounts payable coordinator and a principal account clerk. Because if you look at the budget, half of it is DFS. And there's been lots of payment issues over the years. And because the state system spits out checks prior to it hitting my office, there was a lot of void and reissue. So we set up a satellite office so we could do a pre-audit before that state system spits out the checks. That's very new. We've been doing that for about 2 months now. That's working very well. I have another accounts payable coordinator here, and I have a senior audit clerk and an account clerk that work under us. So we did just add a position, and we did just do the satellite office. So I do feel we're largely represented in places where so much money is expended. So I don't have a deputy. I do have two accounts payable coordinators. They do not have degrees. They've worked with me for a long period of time.
When was that position not filled? When you were promoted?
I believe when I took office, they lowered the position from a deputy to the accounts payable coordinator. And so then we hired someone who was my principal, moved up into that position. She had been in my office for well over 10 years and pretty well trained in it. So she kind of acts as my deputy, but she doesn't have deputy powers. But so
what about salary position? So
She's not going to be the salary of a deputy.
Are you going to try to get a deputy?
The code does. I think, especially with this current county manager and this board, they've taken suggestions seriously, and they did just do a big deal by just allowing me this other position and allowing us to actually have two offices. I also, at one time, I had a fiscal officer. It was abolished during different budget cuts and such. I do find, though, you can bring someone in at a higher salary because, yes, they have that four-year degree. It takes a lot for them to learn the functions of an office. And I could do it, but it's a lot of money and a lot of time that would have to be invested to train someone to be that. So I think right now we've got our best bang for the buck, so to speak, because I have two coordinators who've worked with me for a long period of time. One is 18 years in that office and moved her way up, and the other one I think has been about 8 years, and that's the one I moved to Liberty under GFS. And so I think we have a pretty good structure for what we do. And it would be nice to have someone, if the board so wished, for us to actually go out and do more departmental audits and reviews, but that's what that person would probably be used for. But I do also assist a lot of departments. Probation was one where the restitution accounts needed well balancing. We implemented new financial software down there. I helped them get through quite a bit. I've implemented a new financial software over in DFS for the rep payees. So I do have a lot of hands-on with people, helping them get their money out the door, where Nancy helps them get their money in the door. And we do work very closely with the county manager, and I think all of us have an open door policy. What do you need help with? We'll roll up our sleeves and get it done. So that's the makeup of it right now.
I'm going to ask you the same question I ask everybody, and you heard me ask Nancy, and we would understand, since you're appointed, if you have some hesitancy in answering. Looking at the operation for the number of years that you have and working within it as it kind of went through changes, which it has, and you look at the form of the government as it is, county legislature and county manager, do you think that form, from your perspective, is appropriate for this county now?
I do. I don't I'm not a political person, so I like people being hired based on their merits. So I think a strong county manager that has, you know, the education, the background, the experience is more valuable to me than someone that is going to get the popularity vote. There's no requirement, you, as far as I know, because I don't follow politics, but as far as I know, you can't say you can run for a county exec, but you have to have this kind of degree and this kind of experience and things like that. So I'm kind of a not political and very black and white. So I'm comfortable with this form because I think the current county manager learned as he moved up, and he's well knowledgeable. And I think it's an important thing to have. It's important to have someone who isn't just placed there for popularity.
May I follow just for the second part of it? The relationship between the legislature and the county manager. Stronger, weaker, leave it where it is.
You know, when you asked that question, I started thinking about it, and I do think to a certain extent the county manager should have a little more power, but at what degree is hard to answer. But I will tell you, sitting in board meetings when I see something very important that really should be done being possibly stopped or halted or postponed because there may be a hidden political agenda, that bothers me, you know. And so I sometimes think that maybe legislatures should be hired also because I think that sometimes there's some really good stuff that they want to do, and they're hamstring. They're, you know, they're stopped sometimes. And how much more and how much and how to do it, I don't know.
A stronger chief executive officer would be more efficient in running the operation. You're saying the same thing, Nancy.
Yes, to a certain degree, yes. There are certain decisions that I don't know necessarily would have to always go through the board. I'll just give you a financial decision example. Budget mods go to the board every month. I think this is something they may have changed over the time. But if I wanted, I have my budget, and if I want to move money from my supply line item to my telephone line, that has to be approved to the board. So you're going to sit there and go through these budget mods. What purpose does that? And then if that doesn't make any sense, that I want to move $20 from my phone line to cover an expense in my supply line, I'm still staying within my budget. So you're really going to waste even the legislature's time over that? That's something he should be able to do on his own. That's why he's there. There's other small decisions that that aren't going to majorly impact the board that or the county that he should be able to do on daily operations. Off the top of my head, I can't think of another good one because I'm more of a numbers person, but that's an example.
Thank you for your
candor. I'll get Brian and then Bruce.
When you're saying that you're fine how it's set up with your two different accounts payable people, is part of the problem because the wording for your department is a deputy if funded, that gives them the leverage to potentially you spend the month, let's say they have money this year, they give you the deputy, you take the time to train that person, you take the money to pay that person, and then the following year they don't fund it, so therefore you would lose that person.
I know, because I think once you put them in the budget, you'd have to really, I don't think that would be a give and take. I think it's a matter of if you fund them, they're in the budget. I mean, then they'd have to abolish the position, and I don't think, unless there was budget cuts, major budget cuts, they would do that. I think I've become comfortable with my staffing based on the duties I have and what's been expected of me. If the board wants to start expanding on more audits and things like that, then yes, I would say I would need them to say put in a deputy that somebody can do that. You know, ideally the structure of my office would be great if we had the accounts payable here and an auditing here. Accounts payable, you look at everything before the money goes out the door. Audit, you're going to go out, you're going to do some random selections, you're going to go do some, you know, depending on what you're going to do, if you're looking at their how they're handling certain things, is it a performance audit, what have you, and then give the reports and hope there's going to be improvement. I had done some of them in the past, to be quite honest with you. Most of it is going to require whatever audit office I'm auditing, some extra funding in that office. Because if I go into office X and I say, you should have better internal controls, this one person's doing too much, you need to segregate more duties, I'm just telling you now, you have to hire another person. So, you know, do they want to hire somebody for me to go tell them something that they might already know but can't really afford to fund right now? So.
All right, so that answers that. And the other thing I had is, what is your involvement or with the county manager now? Do you meet regularly? Does he understand everything that your department does?
Oh, I think so. I think he understands exactly what we do. We meet, you know, we used to meet much more regularly. I think we have brief phone calls more often or a quick email situation. But I think we've come to know the function so well that we don't always get to meet every month. I see him at the board meetings, but we communicate on a weekly basis, if not myself communicating, my office communicating with his office. Michelle is in constant communication with my office. So I think we work constantly together. I mean, Heather in her office is in constant communication because we handle certain payments for the, I want to say, third-party electric vendor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're constantly in some form of communication, if not personally, with the different staff members that we work with.
Bruce, you don't like
it. Yeah, I'm actually on the website now at your office, and I don't see where I would find the contracts.
You know, I think it's actually under county, might be under county manager. How do you get to it?
I don't know. I never looked for it.
I
assumed it would. I thought it was under your thing. I just wouldn't know. Well, under.
It's not going to be under me, but you can try under the departments. And it might be under legislatures even. I'm not. Do you know, Michelle, if they put it under management or under legislature?
And my other question was this, while fiddling. I happen to be listening to Thunder 102 interviews today with two legislative candidates, and Fritz asked a question about...
we got a microphone system here. We got many conversations going on that make it difficult.
Well,
you're right, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, I asked a question. Fritz asked a question about is something called the Empire... a thing that serves, I think, 100 and something municipalities that post contracts for all the municipalities, and we are not a part of that. This was yes, this should we be. And do you know what I'm talking about? Do you have an opinion of it?
No, there's a place on the site that has the contracts, but we're missing certain parts of it, and that's what Fritz was asking about. Sullivan County does not participate in that.
Right.
That I don't know about.
Yeah.
And
were
you able to find the contract?
And Mrs. Labuda didn't understand that either.
Sit down.
No.
On the debate.
I'm sorry, Michelle. Let me check that one.
There for 16 years, but she doesn't know about that.
I suggest that this is not easy to find.
You have to listen to the debate.
You know, I know it's there, and I supply the information.
It's on Thunder's website.
It's not your job to.
It's thunder102, I think, .com.
Is it here, or just I can look some, or maybe you can get back to us with this information,
sure,
or someone at
hand.
I can look if
Michelle
you want to. Can you continue the discussion?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just, I'll,
I just,
yes,
I think that's
I'm
happened.
Wasting, yeah. Thank you. And that was my question.
Okay.
Can I make a side comment? I don't know if Angela knows it, but I'm probably responsible for the county tax levy being in your operation. And that was no doubt absolutely the correct thing to do some years ago when that occurred. But that happened because of segregation of duties. And that's, as you get higher in government, it gets tougher and tougher to deal with as the complexity of the government gets worse. And I'll just add this for one second because it's kind of interesting. County Director of Real Property Tax Services, by state law, and that's one of the things you have to understand is different from the towns. Here we're going to, as we go on, talk much more about the state statutes. There's also the Correction of Errors Officer. By law, can't be changed by anybody, including the county.
So having that title, errors in the tax levy of any kind are investigated by the real property tax director by statute. At one point, they came to me and said, well, you know how all this works. We want you to levy the tax. And I said, I can't. It's a blatant conflict. I can't be subservient to myself. I can't do the tax levy. And if there's an error, turn around and investigate myself. Impossible, not allowed. That's how she eventually wound up with us, because, and it went to the right place.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you that in the past, when we first took it on, Joel was the boss at the time. And so we both did it, because I want you to learn, because I'm retiring soon. In fact, after a while, he would just say, authorize whatever you're comfortable with, and when it rains again, I'm coming off my boat and leave it on the side. And he remember how he loved his boat. So then when Brian became county auditor, I taught him the tax levy. And then we still both did it, because there's so many numbers. So then when I became county auditor, I said, at the time was Commissioner Management Budget, Josh, I said, you know, it really is in the best county's interest of the county to have two people do this calculation, sit down and compare, because nobody's going to get it 100% right. You're going to type one number wrong somewhere, just nobody's perfect. So I taught him how to do it, and then as he's been promoted, I've taught other people to do it. So we're still doing two people doing the calculation, because it's that important. But, and it's important for other people to know how to do these things.
Of course.
Okay. Let's just put this to bed for a moment. Can you, did you figure out how to get
yes,
on
that? Yes, they're under purchasing.
Okay.
That's
so
you can find your contract.
Can you just, put a note for us, mm-hmm. all of us, how to get into there?
Yes.
Okay. Great. I just want to go back to one thing that Brian made mention earlier. Those of us who heard presentation early on said that in most cases, when you have an elected county executive, the first thing he does is he asks for every department head's resignation on his desk, and then he decides who he's going to hire after that. So just keep that in mind.
I just like to piggyback on that. You made a statement about popularity contest. The difference between an elected county official is, and a private sector is, you work for the public, and well, they work for the public. You're working for the government, but the difference is it's leadership and accountability. And the problem that many people have right now is that they feel that there's no leadership in this county, and that there's no accountability and transparency. And when you look at someone who elects a president of the United States, a governor, a state senator, they're representing the people. And the people make the determination on the people that are running who they feel are the most qualified. So at the end of the day, the public goes in to vote and participate in the election. They decide who their chairman of the board should be. So when we look at these terms that we're trying to use right now as saying popularity contest, I think that we're belittling the public of Sullivan County by saying that they're not intelligent enough to make an independent choice when candidates come forward, if in case we do say that we would like to look into the county executive.
Well, that is I understand that interpretation, and by no means do I mean to
belittle
them. No, but I
noticed that Nancy and a lot of administration people are using these keywords to make it seem
so
like...
So many people don't even get out and vote. They don't even honor their right to vote, which so many people...
That's the end of the day. You said you're not political.
I'm not. That's my personal opinion, though.
Yeah.
I will tell you that. But you know, people died for that right, and a lot of people don't respect that.
So who should lead the county manager? That's the question. Who hires the county managers, the nine members of the legislature? The nine members of the legislature are elected through are hired by the people of Sullivan County.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're saying that the nine members of the legislature should lose their authority and give more to the person that they're hiring.
I think there's just certain aspects of it. And like I said, I don't think there should be this overflow of, oh, just start giving him all this power. But I do think that there's times when politics gets in the way of them being able to operate.
Well,
but I will say, just quickly with the county manager, you're going to say, I expect them to have an MBA. I'm going to expect them to have this experience.
Correct.
So I'm big on the experience and the capability to be able to do something where when you're elected, there's no, you cannot set qualifications like that. So you could actually hire a controller that has no accounting experience.
Correct.
And that's scary to me.
And we have heard that. We've heard that before, and I appreciate that. Ken, you want to make a comment?
A couple comments. Angela said about budget mods, budget modifications. For a long time, yes, they came in there, and if they had to move $5 from one to the other, and they finally came up with a policy of within the department. They could, that's the discretion of the department head, which was a smart move in a way it should be. It just bothers me as much as when they need to fill a position and they got to come and beg for that position to be filled because somebody has retired. I feel it's in the budget, it should be done, and they run their division, but they got that in there too. And, that's a whole other issue. As far as transparency, and I think we should put this in the charter based upon open meetings law, like they do in the state, whereby all those agencies have to live video all their meetings. And archive them. It's much cheaper to archive today in the digital world, and it's much easier. We can finally do it here. We have some bandwidth issues, I understand, and I think we should look at that as going into the charter and see if the legislature will pass it or adopt it, that all committee meetings and full board meetings shall be live webcast, and they should be archived. And that the reason I say that is, I don't care when the meetings are. They've had afternoon meetings. They had evening meetings. It doesn't matter. Same attendance. But if people want to really know what their government is doing, they can pull it up and have it running while they're making supper or something like that. We give them that opportunity. I don't care if nobody ever tunes in the channel. But we went that extra mile and said, here, you want to know? There it's there. We're not shutting the door in their face. So I think that's something going down the road. When we finally get down to making recommendations, we have to explore it. Now that you mentioned it, and I finally got it on the record because I thought of it and almost forgot it, so thank you.
Can I ask you one question, Angel, please? I hear this kind of undercurrent sometimes as I'm going around in the town, and this issue, the question often becomes now, how are contracts, what is the policy for renewing contracts? All contracts don't go out to bid each time they're renewed. So at what threshold or how is that?
We have a procurement policy, and I would suggest that you possibly get that information from our purchasing director, or the county manager could supply that. But briefly, I can tell you that up to, I believe, from the top of my head, up to $49,999, we can go into contract for services without a formal RFP process. You still need, and there's other thresholds, like as a 10,000 or 25,000, certain quotes and such. And those quotes and are all, if it's oral, a quote is under a certain amount and that's documented. After that, there's written quotes and that's all documented in the purchasing department. And then you can go out for professional services and RFP. And then you basically say, here's everything that I need you to do as a professional. Give me your best price. Give me your qualifications and give me your best price. You don't have to pick the best, lowest price because someone else may be more qualified and have a better niche in that for that service. For bids, it's a different dollar amount. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure what her threshold is. It may be spend more than $10,000, it might be more than $40,000. I don't know the bid amount. Bid is $20,000 now. They have to go to bid. With the bid, you must use the lowest vendor. And that is very specific, and you have very specific bid specs. And you can't say, well, I like this person better or like that person better. Those specs go out. You're gonna supply me this exact pen. I don't want this pen. I'm telling you, I want this specific type of pen. That's the only thing I want a response on. And those bids go out weekly, they're closed, sealed, private bids, they're opened, and then things are awarded. That's all done through the purchasing department, and they're very strict on their processes as well. So Kathy Jones is the director of purchasing, and I would suggest if you want to tweak any of that brief information I gave you, that's who you would speak to.
Okay.
Okay.
Steve?
Mitchell, you mentioned that you'd been doing this 20 years. It made me think about a couple hundred years ago when I was in the Army, and I knew a little bit about how many years it took to retire. I soon learned I wasn't interested in that. And you guys have that are familiar with this. I don't want to waste too much time. But are there different levels or lengths of service for different levels of employees for retirement?
I don't know.
Whether it's money and benefits?
I don't know a ton about the retirement system. I think that's something for personnel that would answer. But I will tell you there's different tiers, and each tier has a different benefit attached to it and retirement. And Paul might be able to expand on that a little bit, but it depends what tier you're in, and age does have a factor, and number of years of service will decide on what kind of benefit you get.
And when you talk about the term benefits, you have to talk about the whole thing. So it's not only retirement, it's also hospitalization and other things. You get a vested right after 10 years, period. Then, as you go down the road, depending on whether you're in management or you may be part of the Department of Public Works, how the contracts are written and whether or not you have a contributory share to health insurance and all these other kind of things can vary between contracts, between the sheriff's department, between the major unit
Teamsters,
here in the county, et cetera. So there's a lot of other variables that are all involved in that, Steve. And the retirement packages for management are not the same as the retirement packages for other people, but in the old days there were reasons for that, which I can explain. So it's not simplistic.
And somewhere there's a number of what it costs the county each year to fund those retirees.
Yeah, and in that financial packet that Nancy had showed you, there's a note on the retirement system, and there's a requirement to actually report what that future liability is going to be. And off the top of my head, I don't know what that number is. It is fairly large. And there's a new GASB requirement that's going to be coming out, which is supposed to now, we may start having to book that liability. So it's going to affect our financials very soon.
Absolutely, and what she's saying is very critical because that comes down from the state as well. The controller's office looks at all of this and then attempts to estimate what these costs are going to be, and they can impose higher costs to the county based on what they need to get in order to cover at the other end, whether you like it or not. So we're not independent in that.
No.
Okay. It's almost 8 o'clock. Okay. 8 o'clock, I guess. Any other follow-up questions here? Andrew, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope I gave you enough information. And if you want to, further clarify anything, please feel free to let me know. I'd be glad to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
My mother still has her hair. She has my 6-year-old and 9-year-old right now. When I called to check, my daughter was bellowing in the background.
So on that.
She is. She is high drama, that's for sure.
Thank you very much. Any comments?
Good point.
Any other comments
either
on what we heard this evening or anything we want to put on the record?
Just say in the budget every year it tells you what the liability is on retirement. It's all in the budget.
It's serious business.
I'm looking for it now. Sure. I have the budget, but I can't find it.
Okay.
I think we need to speak to Kathy Jones, purchasing. To hear the other half.
You want to add her to the list?
Yes.
Sounds like it. And do we need to talk to human resources? You're talking about contracts and things. Do we want to hear?
So the
one. What year are we into then?
26.
Is there anything in our present chart that addresses those issues?
2026.
So just the one thing we were talking, the chair of the legislature is the only required signature on the contract?
Not necessarily.
and I'll reverse it because it's easier to look at it from the school situation and then talk about it from the county's perspective. In a school district, it's more simplistic. The chief executive officer of a school district, which is also a municipal corporation, is the president of the Board of Education. The district superintendent is the chief executive officer of the school board. When it comes to the county, the chief executive officer is the chair of the legislature. However, depending on how state law is written and whether or not there is an allowability for the legislature to designate to the county manager, the chair of the legislature doesn't necessarily have to sign all of the contracts. That could be the county manager under certain circumstances, etc. So it's not as simplistic. Okay?
So is that something that should be simplistic, though? So there's...
No, because one of the problems with county government that makes it so much more complex is because it is interconnected to the state. As I, right. We're going to talk much more about that. So it's not as simple.
There's many motions that come before, resolutions that come before the legislature that says legislature gives permission to the county manager to sign the contracts with XYZ. So it does go through the legislature for, you know, at least a look-see. They know about it, and it's designated the signing authority to.
As long as that's not in conflict with state law, they can do that.
Right.
Okay. Do we have any other business that we need to discuss before this committee? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. We're going to meet. The next scheduled meeting would be November 18th here at 6 o'clock. I guess we're trying to get into the conference.
Well, the reason we did it before was because nobody was really, since...
I'm going to be locking up everything.
So she's
going to
be locked.
Okay with it.
Say that it's totally different. That's why we're meeting in there now.
Good, but we have good chairs.
Go into the when you come in, just come in the county manager.
No, we know how to go.
And I'll have that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Instead of the legislature.
I have a motion on the floor to adjourn. Anybody want to go home? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good job, Larry.
Can we punch these things with a punch so we
like a coffee cart?
The chair has to initial it. So I'm sorry. The chair has to initial it. So
I was trying to get a free cup of.